It was just before Christmas of 2005, 3 weeks shy of my 50th birthday. I went to the gym, rode there and back on my bicycle, and unfortunately found myself struggling a bit in a drizzle and headwind on the way home. Got home, wife leaves for the movies with her sister, and my post-workout meal consists of snacking on some leftover chicken. But right as I'm stuffing my face, I notice this dull, unusual pain in my chest. Felt like indigestion, and since I suddenly wasn't hungry anymore, I figured that's exactly what it was. Yet within a few minutes, the pain got more intense and spread through my upper chest, and I know enough from movies and TV shows that when your left arm goes numb and you get those sharp chest pains, you're in a lot of trouble. First, I called 911. After that, I called my wife. EMTs were at my house in a few moments, and they got me on the sofa and began working on me. I began to feel very tired, like I wanted to close my eyes and sleep, but the EMT kept telling me to stay awake. I closed my eyes for what I thought was a moment. I just couldn't help it. The next thing I know, I was on the floor, and an EMT was kneeling alongside me with the defib paddles in his hands. I had flatlined due to my heart working too fast, and I later learned was down to a 90% blockage in my artery. This happened at least 3 more times at the hospital before I was stable enough to have a cardiologist get me in an OR and insert a stent. Apparently, they called that the Widowmaker or something. As only like 1 in 10 men of my age group survive it. So, the fact that I'm still here is apparently nothing short of a miracle. I spent the next 3 days lying in a hospital bed, and after I was sent home, I spent another 2 weeks recovering in my own bed, followed by almost 3 months of cardiac physical therapy. I've recovered well and am pretty healthy 64-year-old today. I take a number of maintenance meds, and I fought hard to keep my weight down and eat correctly. But I suppose what I really want to say here is that I don't recall going down before being shocked back. It's like you don't know what's happening. When I came to, it was like waking up from a deep nap. But it's the nearest to death I've ever been, and although I don't wish to get that close again, there came a sense of peacefulness that I just wasn't expecting. And ironically, that's what creeps me out the most. When I was a kid, I witnessed a neighbor murder his wife on Christmas Eve. I was still at that age where I actually believed in Santa, so when my mom and dad put me to bed, I stayed up and stared out the window, hoping to catch a glimpse of him landing on the rooftops in our neighborhood. It didn't take long before I realized that I could see into my neighbor's bedroom. It was dark, and all I could see was the shape of a sleeping person covered in a duvet, lit up by the light of a nearby TV. Not exactly Skinamax, I'm sure you'll agree, so I didn't feel too guilty about it, and I kept on looking out for Santa's magic sleigh. Suddenly, there was movement in the bedroom across the way, and I looked in time to see my neighbor walking in on his sleeping wife. I tried to pry my attention away from the bedroom as he moved towards the bed, but then it's quickly drawn back when I see fast, violent movements in the light of the TV. In the low light, it just looked like my neighbor was hitting his wife. And I know that's bad enough, but all I could see were these downward, moving blows and nothing else. So as distressed as I was, all I told my mom and dad when I ran downstairs was like, "I think the neighbor's beating up the neighbor mom." My dad just bolts upstairs, figuring I'd seen something from my bedroom window. He went up to check it out, but by that time, someone had drawn the curtains. My dad asked me if I hadn't just had a bad dream, but I swore to him that I'd been awake and on the lookout for Santa. I then repeated everything I'd seen in exact detail, and by that time, Mom was listening too. When I finished, Dad and Mom gave each other a look. You know, one of those Mom and Dad concerned looks that's like an entire conversation within a silent word spoken. Then, my dad kneels down and asks me something. "Buddy, are you sure that's what you saw? Because we could get in a lot of trouble if that's not true." But again, I'm not totally insistent that I saw what I saw. and I didn't find out what happened immediately after that until quite a while later, but as I was actually drifting off to sleep, Mom and Dad were downstairs having a very tense but quiet conversation. Dad, to his eternal shame, was insisting that I couldn't be sure, that the room had been dark, and that I might have even seen them possibly doing something that I shouldn't have, and just not understood what I was seeing. Mom, on the other hand, was steadfast in her better safe than sorry attitude, and told my dad that if he didn't call the cops, she'd take me to my aunt's place because she wouldn't be celebrating Christmas next to a wife-beating neighbor. And that was that. My dad called the cops. He said he was praying it was some kind of mistake, but given how he could just give an anonymous tip, he figured, why not? My parents then watched from their own bedroom window, which had a view of the neighbor's driveway, as the cops pulled up outside and knocked on their door. They said it was this nail-biting moment, hoping they'd hear the sound of the neighbor's wife answering the door before being all, "Oh, good evening, officers. What seems to be the problem?" That way, they could just carry on drinking eggnog and watching Jesus Christ Superstar or whatever they had on down there. But instead of that, they watched the cops knock, then knock again, all before they apparently turned on their flashlights and began circling the home. What woke me up was hearing, "Sir, come out with your hands up," and all this other cop speak when the police finally blocked off the guy's house for the eventual standoff that would unfold. Our neighbor had a gun and he was threatening to shoot at police officers if they attempted to enter his home. The next thing I remember, my mom is rushing into my room and telling me to get dressed. The cops had knocked at our house and told us that they were evacuating the area, just as a precaution in case a shootout had commenced. Our house had that old stucco style of wall, which is apparently pretty safe, but even so, the cops weren't taking any chances. Considering that we lived in Texas at the time, the guy could have had anything in there. My parents say that when they were driving out of the area, the whole street lit up by blue and red flashing lights. They had no idea what kind of scene that they were going to come back to. This wasn't all that long after the whole Waco thing either. Well, a few years after, but fear of some repeat shootout type deal weighed on everyone's mind as news of the standoff got around town. And it ended pretty anticlimactically. The guy actually took his own life as the police were finally busting into his house. But upstairs they found the dead body of his wife, still lying in her bed, exactly where I'd seen her, stabbed more than 30 times. I hadn't been watching the guy hitting his wife. I've been watching him stab her over and over again, and all I'd done for a couple of the seconds there was just watch. Once all the info was out there, Mom and Dad tried as best they could to shield me from it, because they correctly figured that once I put two and two together and worked out what I'd seen, I'd be extremely messed up by it. And yeah, I really was. Seeing it screwed me up for a long time afterward, and I didn't grow up out of the general anxiety disorder until my early 20s. I just figured that if our neighbor could do something so terrible to someone he seemed to love, then anyone could do it. People I'd known for years, people I was otherwise warm to, they could be capable of the obscenest acts of random evil. Just because they looked normal, just because they smiled when they saw you in the driveway in the mornings, didn't mean they were a monster, hiding in plain sight. Back when I was a kid, me and all my brothers and sisters would sleep in the basement on Christmas Eve to give Santa, i.e. our parents, enough space to arrange all of the presents under the Christmas tree. One night, I remember noticing that there was a lot of noise coming from outside on the street, but we couldn't see or anything because there was snow covering the windows. Suddenly, our mom came downstairs and told us not to come upstairs until she told us. Not long after, we heard sirens and saw police lights reflecting in the snow. But this was kind of a rough neighborhood, so it wasn't like a few emergency vehicles were going to make our ears prick up. There was a lot of commotion that we couldn't see, but we were so excited that it was Christmas Eve that we just didn't pay it any mind. Then, the next thing we know, My dad is walking down the stairs, followed by none other than Santa Claus himself. We all just freaked out. I heard you had to line up for hours at the mall if you wanted to meet Santa. Then there he was, making a guest appearance at my house on Christmas Eve, his busiest time, which was definitely a high compliment indeed. We all said hi, ran up and gave him hugs, before Santa told us that his sleigh crashed in the snow outside. He was waiting for the police to show up so they could get him back in the skies again, and while they were working to get him unstuck, he had decided to come visit a few of us neighborhood kids to see how our Christmases were going. He also had a huge surprise for us. He had a present for each of us, and we were allowed to open them early. We opened them up, sang a few Christmas songs, and then when we were done, Santa said goodbye and went back to delivering toys. And it wasn't until years later that I found out what really happened that night. Santa hadn't crashed in the street outside. In reality, there had been a huge gang fight outside of our house involving knives and baseball bats. Three people had lost their lives that night, which the EMTs were unable to save a single one of them. In the chaos that followed, an older guy from our church who happened to live down the road figured my parents might be struggling to help keep his calm with all the violence outside. So, not knowing that we were blissfully ignorant of it, he put on his Santa suit and came over once the police arrived. Santa was a hero to me as a child, but I now know that it was a kindly neighbor that was the real hero, and stuff like that is what Christmas is all about.
My grandma always described Uncle John as an odd duck. Quirky was the word my mom used. Personally, growing up as the middle child in a really big family, I always just saw him as fun Uncle John. He would always bring us presents every time he'd visit, and he just always seemed like the life of the party. You'd be able to hear him telling a story from two rooms over because of how excited he would get in his retelling. Then one holiday weekend, something had changed. He was really reserved in a way that frightened me. This bubbly, ever-friendly man that I'd grown up adoring was now seemingly someone entirely different, and he was more than just quiet. He was morose. My cousin and I were pulling a Christmas cracker, and when it popped, it was the first shred of a real reaction that I'd seen from John all night long. He was beyond startled. He was shook up and screaming his lungs out, near inconsolable for a few minutes, and then in a flash, just as quickly as it had started, he was right back to his near-comatose state of reservedness. Later on, when all of my relatives were getting ready to head home after the evening's festivities, I overheard my parents whispering between themselves in the kitchen. My mom saying things like, "It wouldn't be right to send him off back to his motel room. He was so upset earlier. Clearly he still needs more time. He shouldn't be alone right now." My dad then cutting her off with a dismissive, "Look, what happened to him was terrible, but I really don't want him here overnight while he's like this. Who knows what could happen?" Whatever argument followed next, my mother clearly won, because my dad was making up the bed in the spare room for John just minutes later. That night, as my mom was tucking my tiny 9-year-old frame into bed, she offered a few vague reassurances. "Your Uncle John is just a little mixed up right now. He had a terrible accident, and he just needs our help to become himself again. It'll be fine, sweetie. I promise." Feeling an air of naive relief wash over me, I quickly drifted off to sleep. For a while, at least. I later woke up in the pitch blackness of my large bedroom, a thin sliver of light creeping in from the street lamp outside, the only sound being the same light snoring from my parents' room down the hall that I'd become so accustomed to. But just as I was falling back into a slumber, I noticed a different sound coming from the hallway. In between my dad's snores, I could hear breathing. Not too heavy, but loud enough to distinguish itself from my dad's ambient sleep sounds. It wasn't in the room with me, thank God, but it was definitely there, in the hallway, and the more intently I listened, the louder it seemed to get. A consistent light breath pattern with a slight raspiness to it. With each inflection of breath, I could hear the rattle. I knew for sure that it wasn't one of my siblings. It was very clearly an adult. At least an hour of this passed, and I was now wide awake and absolutely terrified. I was struggling to work up the courage to scream for my parents. Then suddenly my heart nearly burst out of my chest. Whatever was in the hallway darted from its place in the center between mine and my parents' room, then down the stairs and out the back door, slamming it hard behind itself. This commotion was more than enough to rouse my mom and dad, and they quickly got up to investigate. My mom bursts in and then immediately begins questioning me once she sees I'm awake too. "Are you okay? Was Uncle John in your room?" she asked, amongst other things. That's when my dad then walked in and then ushered my mom back into the privacy of the hallway. I couldn't really make out much of the conversation, except for the first thing he said to her. "John's not in his room." Uncle John was missing for about 4 hours. In the early morning, my dad ended up finding him at the bottom of a steep ravine, a short walk away from our property. He was wedged deep in a crevice, feet pointing up to the sky, with his head crushed in between two tight rock formations, barely recognizable if not for the fact that he was wearing the same clothes, minus a slipper, and a long strip of leg material from the PJs my dad had loaned him the night before. The theory from investigators is that he had ran from the house in distress, then wound up at the cliffy rock side above where he was found, and tripped off without seeing the ledge in the darkness, then tumbling headfirst into the murky rocks below. I never saw the scene myself for obvious reasons, but when I talked to my dad about it, not too long before he died, he told me that something about the whole thing just really seemed off. Besides the fact that it was a bloody mess, John was wedged in this crevice in a way that just really didn't seem natural at all, as in that it would have been very difficult to fall from the cliffside right into the ravine and land headfirst with enough accuracy to make the small gap in the rock formation, especially in the dead of night in a confused daze after having recently suffered severe head trauma from a car accident. Of course, it was ruled a suicide though, and nothing more ever came of it. We didn't really talk about John much after that while I was growing up. Whenever I'd bring him up, my mom would always say that he joined the army, or found work abroad, or whatever other excuse she could think up on the fly. Her answer was never the same. I think it was all just too painful for her. I can't help but wonder though, what really happened to him that Christmas night way back then. I never got any in-depth details about his accident, but it must have been truly devastating for him mentally. Why did he run from the house, and why so suddenly? I suppose I'll never know. I can't help but think about him though, especially when I wake up in the middle of the night to be met with a deafening silence in the pitch black, listening for the breathing in the hallway. I was probably a 6 or 7 year old girl, but to be honest, I don't really remember my age at the time, just that I was a young kid. My family used to spend our Christmas Eve nights at my Aunt A's house, along with the rest of our extended family. Nothing unusual ever happened every year. That is, until this one particular year. I want to start off by saying that no one in my extended family ever spent the night at my Aunt A's. We'd all usually go home afterwards, and then come back the next day for Christmas dinner. Apparently that year, my dad had drank a lot of beer, and at the time, my mom was afraid to drive at night, so we decided to just spend the night there. I remember playing with my cousin Jay and my older sister Em in the living room, as all the adults talked and laughed while watching over us. I suddenly felt tired, so I decided to lay down on a medium-sized SpongeBob SquarePants plush toy that I'd saw on the floor. The next thing I remember, I woke up in the middle of the night to what I can guess was probably around 12 to 3 a.m. I'm not really sure, to be honest. I was laying on the couch that faces a doorway that connects the living room and dining room, as well as the kitchen. There happened to be a window on the right side of the living room that let in moonlight, which really illuminated a portion of the living room. I remember looking up and seeing two kids standing at the doorway. They were completely white, which I thought was because of the moonlight hitting them. It looked like they were having a conversation, with the girl turned at the boy, and both doing suggestive hand movements that one might do during a conversation. The weird part was that I couldn't hear a single sound coming from them, not even a whisper. The room was completely silent. It was like if you were watching two people talk on TV, but you hit the mute button. They didn't seem to notice that I was looking at them either. They also kind of resembled my cousin Jay and my sister M in terms of height. Because of this, I initially thought it was them. I was just about to get up and walk over to them to ask what the hell they were doing at this time of night, when suddenly, I got this really uneasy feeling that maybe I shouldn't. So I decided to wake up my mom, who was right below me sleeping on the floor. I then asked her where was Jay and my sister M. She annoyingly replied that Jay was sleeping in his room, and my sister M was sleeping on the same couch I was sleeping in, just below my legs. I know this might sound confusing, but I was sleeping on a curved long couch, so I didn't immediately notice that my sister was sleeping on the couch with me. Anyways, as soon as my mom told me this, my heart immediately started racing. Then, who are these kids? I thought. I know it wasn't any of my other cousins because I scanned the living room, and it was only my family sleeping here. Not any aunts or uncles in sight. And remember when I said that no one spends the night at Aunt A's house? So I knew they weren't any of my cousins. They didn't even look like them. In the middle of me rambling my head, trying to deduce what the hell was going on, I looked up and saw that those kids had stopped whatever they were doing, and then started staring right in my direction. They were standing there still, just looking at me. I could literally feel their gaze. I immediately got super spooked. I guess I was too scared to even wake up my mom, because all I did was bury my head in the blanket that I was wrapped up in, just not knowing what the hell to do. I stayed like that for at least 20 minutes, just waiting. When I finally gathered the courage to peek out, I saw that they were gone. After that, my memory started to fade, so I suppose I fell asleep after that. I must have been a dumb child, because I didn't tell my mom what I saw until years later. You see, at first, I thought I may have imagined it because I was just a kid. However, when I told my mom about my experience, she seemed really spooked. She told me that my Aunt A had apparently been having really odd experiences while living in that house. This ranged from spoons and pans suddenly falling on the floor, to hearing heavy footsteps in the living room at times when she was supposed to be home alone. She experienced other creepy encounters too, but that's just to describe what was generally going on in the house. Because of this, my mom believes that I may have seen the spirits of two children, especially because according to her, usually children can sometimes see spirits because they're really innocent and pure-hearted. Now that I think about it, I remember that I never really liked being alone in any of the rooms when I'd visit there. I would always really get this unsettling, creepy feeling when I did find myself alone there, so I would always stick by my sister and cousin at all times. I never really experienced anything else creepy there. Well, with the exception of the second time I slept there. That time though, I'd slept with my parents on the same bed, and I remember waking up crying because I had dreamt of a naked lady covered in blood walking around in Aunt A's kitchen. I couldn't really be too sure about that one because, well, it could have just been a bad dream. However, after my first creepy experience there, that place just always gave me the creeps every time we visited after that. After my mom told me of Aunt A's experiences, I decided to do some research on the house, and I discovered it was built in 1928. Since the house is really old and was owned by a lot of people in the past, it's honestly very possible people died there, and perhaps even those two kids. My Aunt A eventually moved out, by the way. I'm not too sure if those two spirits were malevolent or not, but this encounter was enough to make me strongly believe that spirits in the paranormal definitely exist.
It was December, some many years ago. I somehow found myself doing shoots for one of those get your picture taken with Santa things. For the most part, I just took the money for the pictures and everyone else did the rest. It wasn't exactly the most exciting thing. Without going into too much detail, I'll just say that when it came to an end, I think I was more excited for that than I was my own high school graduation. There's a lot of reasons. Things like screaming children, the ironic teenagers who had a tendency to mess with the setup, you name it. But I think the biggest thing was the fact that it was just plain humiliating. At least the people were nice. There was this super hot lady who was always nice to me. Not that I had a chance or anything, but it was a big reason why I didn't just walk away. The guy they had who played Santa was a funny dude. He played the role very well and very enthusiastically. The children, or at least the ones who weren't crying, just ate his act right up. In a lot of ways, I kind of admired the man. On breaks, I would usually smoke with him in the back entrance. One time, I asked him what his secret was. He looked me square in the eyes with this intense stare, which, mind you, he was still dressed as Santa, so it was somewhere between being hard to take serious and also hard not just to shrug off. "Drugs," he said flatly. Then he held the look just long enough to make it extremely awkward. Finally, he burst into laughter. It was hard not to laugh with him. The guy had one heck of a sense of humor. So one day, he pulls a no-call, no-show. I get in and everyone is freaking out. Usually nobody cared all that much as we all got to go home, but seeing as it was Christmas in a few days, this was when the profit was at its height. Messing with this was not to be taken lightly. 10 minutes into me showing up and they decided I should take the role. I wasn't that old, however, I was pretty fat at the time. I put up an argument, but in the end, it was do it or get fired. I tried to convince myself that impressing the hot lady I mentioned earlier would make it worthwhile, but when that first kid crawled on my lap and told me that she wanted a PlayStation 2, I realized that nothing could redeem this. About 3 hours into doing this, I noticed a strange man sitting in the food court. He looked older, like his skin was leathery. He looked like he's been in a few fights, too. He was looking right at me. I'm not talking about a bypassing glance either, no. This guy was giving me the stink eye. I tried to ignore him, figuring he'd just go away after a while, but the guy just stayed right there. He wouldn't stop staring at me. I wanted to point this guy out to my coworker, thinking that they could call security, but then I started to let the possible repercussions snowball in my head. What if he realized what I did, just walked away to another location where he could attack me in, let's say, the parking lot, or maybe the backseat of my car? By this point, I knew he was here for me. Nobody does what he does unless they're in it for the long run. Break time comes and I make a brisk jog, like walk away from his sight. As I do, I see him get up and move to follow me. As soon as I hit the corner, I run for it. Realizing this goon might see me at any second, I run straight into the public bathroom to my left and hide myself in one of the stalls. It's about a minute before the door bursts open and the creepy dude runs into the bathroom, slightly out of breath. I hold my breath, terrified that if I didn't, the bells on the Santa suit would give me away. Thing is, it's pretty hard to hide when you're dressed like Father Christmas. You see, you got these red pants and these black boots. They're a dead giveaway, especially when you're hiding in a stall where you can see the feet underneath. The man saw it straight away and kicked the door open. He grabbed me by the collar and shoved me against the wall. I could tell he was in his late 30s, early 40s maybe. He demanded me to give him the money I owed him. Here's the thing. I'd never seen this guy before, not once in my entire life. Why would I owe him money? Did I borrow money from someone recently? No, that couldn't be. "I don't know what you're talking about," I tell him. I'm sufficiently freaked out at this point. What did I get myself into? I mean, to an outsider, I'm sure it looks silly. A goon intimidating a Santa in a bathroom. This guy rips my mask right off my face and throws it in the sink. Then he raises his fist to punch me. But before he lets his fist fly, he takes a step back, letting go of me. "You're not him." He looks more afraid than I do at this point. He demands that I stay right there as he pulls out a flip phone and calls somebody. He's pretty low-key about what he's saying, and I'm just standing there completely nervous. What was just a minute felt like hours to me as the man paced back and forth in the bathroom as I stand there in my beardless Santa outfit. Finally, the guy flips his phone shut and smiles at me. I see he's got teeth missing. I'll never forget what he said. It was equal parts confusing and relieving. "Sorry, bud. Wrong Santa. Merry Christmas." And out he went. I was pretty confused, to say the least. I don't know how I pulled off the rest of that Santa shift, but apparently not all that great. My boss kept reprimanding me for seeming too nervous and not being cheerful enough. Later that night, it all seemed to come together to me. The Santa who banged in, he was the one they were after. In the end, it all made perfect sense. Why he was so animated, why he always seemed in a good mood, the whole works. All things considered, he was very naughty, and I was almost the one who got the coal. I don't know if they ever caught up to him in the end, but if they did, I for one hope that his wallet was full. I'd hate to see what they'd do if he had nothing to give.